Join us on an amazing journey over 20 years that touches on wind forms, WPF. There is even a little silver light. And we're going to look at the futures of .NET Core 3 and how that works with the desktop. You won't want to miss this. Hello and welcome to another episode of On.NET. I'm your host, Jeremy Lickness, and I'm here today with Mike Harsh. We're going to be talking a little bit about WinForms, WPF, and .NET Core. But before we jump into it, tell me a little bit about what you do at Microsoft.
Thanks, Jeremy. Yeah, I'm a program manager on the Windows platform team. I've been at Microsoft for nearly 20 years now.
Wow.
I started actually as an intern on the Windows Forms team back in 1999. Okay. And then I worked on the Windows Forms team for about 6 years after that. So I'm very, very steeped in the .NET client programming. That was kind of my really growing up at the company and learning how to be a PM and learning, you know, really how to dig deep in .NET coding and figuring out all the fun things you can do and how much power you have with client programming. So that's definitely my key part of my background.
So that's something you've stuck with then for 20 years is staying on that client side?
Pretty much, yeah. So after WinForms, I worked on Silverlight for about another 6 years. Then I
Silverlight, yes.
Right, yeah.
Okay, got to get that in there.
You know, some good times.
Sure.
It was a really fun team to work on. The product was loved by many. It was really a great thing for developers. But all good things must come to an end, perhaps
sure.
Abruptly sometimes. And then after that, I worked on Xbox and shipped the Xbox One product.
It was
codenamed Durango at the time. And then after that, that was a really intense time. The Xbox project was very, management had very high expectations for the product. And we kind of put together a 10-year plan for what the whole Xbox One lifecycle would be. And they kind of tried to ship the whole thing in the first year, which didn't work out super well. We ended up shipping something that we were really proud of, but we worked a lot of nights and weekends. We were kind of like on 7-day shifts for about the last 3 months, so that was a grueling pull. And then after that, Kevin Gallo, who's my boss right now, he used to run the Silverlight team, and after the whole Windows Phone shuffle merged
sure.
together, he took over the Windows platform team again, and I moved back to work on Windows under Kevin. So that's what I've been doing for the last 4 years.
Wow. So when you started as an intern with WinForms, if someone had said 20 years from now, you'll be talking about WinForms and moving to this new .NET Core platform, I'm sure you would have said, really? Will it last this long?
If you would have asked me 20 years ago if I was still excited about WinForms, if we'd still be talking about WinForms, I'd probably say yes.
Okay.
You know, before I worked on the WinForms team, I had an internship for a different company porting an app to VB. It was an old Fortran app. And I was, you know, coming from a, you know, sophomore level CS degree at Penn State, I had only really toiled in like, you know, CS, you know, editing in VI on a Unix workstation.
Okay.
And coming from that to the power of VB5 at the time, I was just blown away at how productive you could be, how much work you could get done so quickly. And all of the stuff that you didn't want to have to deal with just got out of your way. And the power of the development tools and the platform really just was it was an aha moment for me to see that. And then, you know, WinForms really is just, you know, effectively VB7 from a feature set perspective, right? I mean, obviously
okay.
It's written in .NET. There's a lot of, you know, things, especially VB.NET compared to VB, a lot of people have religious debates about how close those languages actually are to each other. But from a feature set perspective and the user experience perspective, you know, you've got, you know, I guess for the people at home, you've got the, you know, control toolbox over here, you've got your form, you've got your property grid, like that metaphor was kind of the same, and that level of productivity was still the same. And, you know, still to this day, I'll put it, you know, kind of next to anyone that the most productive UI framework we've ever come out with, especially if you consider the tools, is WinForms.
And I think that's huge. I had a separate conversation with the design team on WinForms. And it's something that we see today with all the excitement around these announcements to sort of revitalize
yep.
what's happening. It's very alive and well. There's a huge customer base that are aligned behind it. So I want to step back. We've got .NET Core, cross-platform, does basically with release 3, it's starting to do pretty much everything now that in the earlier releases there were some API compatibility, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're bringing on board WPF,
mm-hmm.
and WinForms.
Mm-hmm.
So taking a step back, what was the motivation, the drive behind making that change? And I think we touched on it a little bit with the popularity mm-hmm. of the tool set, but what else can you lend as insights?
So Scott Hunter and I were chatting about this probably two-ish years ago, and we were constantly staggered by the telemetry we saw in Visual Studio. The number of users using WinForms projects, creating new WinForms projects, and WPF projects, and creating new WPF projects was staggering. I mean,
so it's not just legacy projects you're looking
no,
at.
No, this,
you're
this
file
is,
new
yeah,
WinForms
yep.
project.
Yep. I mean, the numbers are enormous.
Okay.
And it's, again, you know, we don't, at least now, you know, with the benefit of a little perspective and time and distance, it's like calling those apps and those frameworks legacy is just, it's ridiculously short-sighted, and it, you know, it does the internal people at Microsoft no favors in how we think about the products, and it certainly does customers no favors in how they think about those products and how they use them in their applications on their projects. It could, because really that is the heart and soul of a lot of you know, customers' infrastructures inside the
sure.
company. And you know, they're not legacy, they're active code. Those are the projects that are, you know, running people's day-to-day jobs, and you know, people are using it for all sorts of different applications. And so, you know, when we saw that, and then the kind of popularity and some of the key benefits of .NET Core, especially side-by-side, that was really resonating with a lot of desktop customers. And you know, they talked to us and said, I have X thousands, literally thousands of .NET client apps, either WinForms or WPF, in my organization, and any given machine might only have, you know, a couple hundred, maybe even, you know, let's just say even a couple dozen. But every time a .NET framework update comes out, that's a system-wide update.
Right.
All of a sudden, before I can push that out to any given mm-hmm. system, I have to validate all of the WinForms and WPF apps on that system to make sure they work with that version of .NET framework, even though as Microsoft we've done everything we can to make that as compatible as we possibly can. We use telemetry for crash reporting, all sorts of other aspects that we can measure, but a lot of these apps live behind the firewall in enterprises, and we get no insight into that.
Right.
That telemetry never comes out, which is great, you know, from you know, a privacy and security perspective, but that doesn't help us with the compatibility angle.
Sure.
And so, you know, even with our best intentions, and you know, working really hard and preview releases, we would still have breaking changes. And a lot of times, the interactions in a UI framework can be very subtle, and something that a PM or a dev might look at and say, "Oh, that's not a breaking change," can actually break somebody. Like if you have a, you know, if you're moving pixels around, if you're bolding something that's not bolding, if something gets a little bit wider and overlaps with something else on the screen, that can be a breaking change visually. And you know, there might not be any behavior change, but users have the, you know, as humans we get very attuned to exactly where things are positionally,
right.
And if you move them a little bit, you can totally, you know, wonk up someone's workflow. I mean, just go back to Windows 8, right? Like, talk about moving someone's cheese.
Yeah, well, I mean, I even look at my consulting days. People tend to exploit the system, so to speak, too, right? If there's a way to use it, even if it's not the way it was intended,
yeah, exactly.
They're going to find a way. And if someone says, "Well, that was a mistake. It's not supposed to be used that way," and take it out.
You broke somebody, right?
Exactly.
And so the compatibility behind the full .NET framework release updating an entire machine, you know, even if it only had a small subset of all that enterprise's apps, that was a huge testing burden.
Sure.
And so we had customers that would take literally years to move forward to a .NET framework version. So they not only would they not take some of the patches, they would also not take major feature versions. They'd skip a few because it was so costly and painful to move. And so the idea of taking the side-by-sideness of .NET Core and applying that to this desktop problem of WinForms and WPF, we just really felt like chocolate and peanut butter. And so, you know, with this, effectively, you can, you know, we have .NET Framework 4.8 as kind of the version that we will no longer make breaking changes to. We will really just do security servicing for, and you know, making sure if there's other key things, we will make sure and keep moving that forward in .NET 4.8. But that kind of lays that compatibility in stone, and so that, you know, basically we will service that for God knows how long, right? I mean,
right.
Windows, our servicing windows are enormous.
10 years, right? Like usually,
yeah,
five.
Yeah, it's
and
typically
five,
10 years, but there's always ways for important customers and important enterprises
to extend, to get
extra service. Like we're going to make sure that we take care of customers if their business relies on our software. And so at that point, then, you know, you can, with the .NET framework and side-by-side, or .NET Core side-by-side, you can now take an app, if you want to use a new feature, you can take advantage of that new feature
And just upgrade that.
And just upgrade that single app. So your machine stays the same, all your apps that you don't touch stay the same, continue working. And then when you use .NET Core 3 in an app, we've done everything we can, and we've worked with a bunch of partners to make sure the porting experience of taking an app and moving it to .NET Core 3 is really seamless. And we've had really great experiences with customers who've tried this, and we've had good feedback from the community now that we have the previews out. And then you can just move that forward. And there's some other benefits too. There's been a lot of advancements in the compiler and the language, C# and VB languages, just generally .NET, that give you some performance benefits of using .NET Core instead of .NET Framework. So I think Scott Hunter has showed his demo last year build. He basically took an app and just the runtime of it, you know, doing basically a kind of a reflection-based query got sure. quite a bit faster.
Okay. So there's basically the idea that I can upgrade an app, take advantage of new features. There's the performance benefits, but there's this whole package deal with going with .NET Core that just opens up
yeah.
possibilities. Now, what are some of the, I guess, unique challenges that you face? You had a conversation, and at some point someone said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to make the glue between WPF and WinForms and .NET Core 3. What challenges came out of that?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that at Microsoft, a lot of times the enemy of the current is some magical, shiny future. And, you know, a lot of the discussions we had that, you know, to get that product to come out and to get that plan to become reality was there's a lot of, you know, talking with management folks and making sure that, you know, we were not, again, to go back to the earlier conversation, talk about these things as legacy, and that's the mental model a lot of people in Microsoft had, and that
right.
is not how customers are interacting with us and treating it, and helping management folks understand that we're helping customers, we're not breathing new life into legacy products,
right.
was kind of a very frustrating experience, but in the end, we managed to, you know, we used data, we used customer testimonials and experiences to help, you know, really understand that this is something that is going to be very beneficial for our ecosystem and our customers, and that's really how we should be spending our energy. So, I mean, obviously there's lots of technical challenges, but honestly, the biggest hurdle to get over was a political challenge.
And that's almost everything, right? When there's a new
yeah.
approach to software methodology,
yeah.
when new frameworks come out, a lot of it is people, not necessarily
yeah.
technology tools. So,
and at the end of the day also, I mean, this is an enormously big company. There's, you know, 100,000 plus people here, so it's not always possible to move as efficiently and leanly as you would like to do, right? I mean, we're just, you know, there's 100,000 opinions. So
right.
it takes a while to organize that.
So was the decision to open source WPF and WinForms tied to the decision to bring them into .NET Core, or were those sort of independent?
They were definitely independent decisions.
Okay.
Absolutely. And that was one that we approached, you know, first, the side-by-side promise, basically the compatibility pain point of the .NET Framework upgrades was really the motivating factor. That was the key thing that when we were talking to folks and explaining the pain this was causing enterprise customers, that was really the key motivating factor to move WinForms and WPF to .NET Core 3.
Okay.
Once it was there, and once that code was working, then the conversation became, well, everything else in .NET Core is open source. Why are we not open sourcing WinForms and WPF as well? And so that was kind of the next step of that conversation. And that one actually was less controversial.
Okay.
So that has been a really fun experience as well. Like when we announced that in December, you know, at Scott Gu at Connect, and it was kind of humbling to see, you know, how many, you know, pull requests and stars those repos got so quickly. It was really fun to watch. But we definitely had some challenges and are continuing to work through the challenges for WPF, because WinForms is a lot more of a straightforward framework than WPF as far as open sourcing those two things.
Well, I think two things that I'm pulling out of this. One is it's definitely a new Microsoft, right?
Mm-hmm.
Open source is something everyone wants
yep.
now. It's not something that we resist. But the other thing is that I think there's this general impression that you have a product and you say you're going to open source it. Okay, flip the switch. You upload the source and you're done. And
yeah.
that's not the case, obviously.
No. Well, I mean, neither half of those statements are true,
right?
right? You can just flip the switch. Not true.
Right.
You're done once you flip the switch. Also not true.
Right.
right? I mean, so from the first side, you know, WinForms was a little bit more straightforward. A lot of the work was kind of preceded by doing the .NET Framework as reference source earlier. The WPF, I guess if you just think about the frameworks, WinForms is a .NET wrapper, a convenience wrapper, if you will, that added a bunch of, you know, other functionality on top of it, basically on Win32, on the Win32 UI stack, on Comcuddle and, you know, HWinz and right. How Win32 worked, GDI, GDI Plus. But WPF was a new beast kind of from the ground up from a UI, you know, presentation. Obviously, there's an HWinz, there's a handful of HWinz in there because it's kind of hard to be in Windows without any HWinz, but for the most part, an element, the main widget, if you will, in WPF did not have an HWinz behind it, whereas every control, effectively, anything that inherited from control had an HWinz in WinForms. And so it was much lighter weight from the perspective of individual elements. You could create lots of elements, you can compose them together, and you can create these beautiful UIs that you got from WPF compared to WinForms. But it was more of a kind of ground up rewrite of a UI stack for Windows. And so there was a lot more code in it. It used subsystems in Windows and created some subsystems in Windows that were not nearly as easy to just kind of move into a different build system effectively and to get to build outside of the Windows system.
Gotcha.
And so a lot of the work there was, what we've been continuing to do, it's not done yet, is, you know, for the last few months since the announcement, we've been working really hard to get the build system and the test system ready to go so that once we start to put more of that code out in the open and there's pull requests coming in from the community, you can build and test them and they can validate them. And, you know,
kind of important to be
able
to
build
and to test.
Because to go back, like once you do the work to make sure that your code can build outside of its traditional home, because almost all of the Microsoft technologies up until the last, you know, 5 to 7 years grew up in a, you know, independent source location, right? They either the Windows tree or, you know, DevDiv has its own, you know, we used Source Depot for a long time in Windows. But that code grew up and lived in Source Depot. Getting that to live and get and build with a different set of tools takes a bunch of effort. And it was less for WinForms, but for WPF, we've been spending a bunch of time getting that code ready. And so once you've got that done, then you can flip the switch and it's open. But at that point, you're still not done because you, of course, have to continue to work with the community. You have to look at pull requests. You have to respond to the issues the community has and figure out what are the right things for you to spend your energy on next, aside from dealing with all the pull requests that come in. So I feel like open sourcing begins a journey. It doesn't really end a journey.
So WPF is still an ongoing story.
Yes,
is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, and you know, we're WPF. It's not really a switch. It's a series of smaller switches, right? We're trying to move as much code as we can into that repo as quickly as we can.
Makes sense. So besides that future of moving more of WPF to open source, are there any other futures with this fusion of WinForms and WPF and .NET Core that you can talk about? Any roadmap?
Well, so probably the next thing after, so we still have to ship .NET Core 3, including getting all the WPF code and the WinForms designer code into the repo.
Right.
And so that will be part of the .NET Core 3 release. But I'm really excited about all the announcements Scott Hunter made at Build about .NET 5. Like for me, the biggest missing feature is an ahead of time compilation story.
Right.
So with .NET Framework, you had NGen, and you could take your app, and NGen had plenty of issues. it was super easy to make sure that your NGen image didn't do the right thing.
Right.
Like, you know, it was all these. It's always out of sync. It's always not valid. But when you had once you had NGen dialed in, it worked really well as far as accelerating your performance time and, you know, not have to deal with JIT at launch. So Scott announced as part of .NET Core 5, kind of unifying all the .NET runtimes, and part of that means having a unified ahead of time compilation story. And so I'm really excited for that to you know, come out and be applied to WinForms and WPF so that we can have a great ahead of time compilation story again and get that really snappy startup times that you expect with those apps.
So it sounds like, and this has been the trend with all the .NET Core releases, performance, performance, performance. Keeping pace with language features, not disrupting existing versions, but a lot of performance going into it. And then with .NET 5, sort of that focal
point. Yeah, unifying everything together.
Moving forward, so very exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating that it seems that from an application framework level and even a compiler level, we have to keep swimming upstream to get more performance when the hardware underneath is getting so much faster, right?
Exactly.
And realistically speaking, we're swimming upstream against all the security patches. That, you know, like modern computing has so many more security checks than it used to, like from the hardware through the software through the kernel layer, and you're paying that tox constantly. And so, obviously SSDs and CPUs are getting screamingly fast, but you always have to, you know, at least at the user client level. I mean, obviously on the server, you want more performance so you can scale more. But on the client level, you still one human using a machine, you know, running a handful of apps at a time. You think this would be a fully solved problem right now from a performance perspective, but
not yet.
Not until bad people start wanting to do things with your computer.
Well, I think there's that law of expansion too. I think about, you know, when I started on the Commodore 64, and we're talking 2 megahertz processor, and half of that was dedicated to graphics. So it was effectively 1 megahertz, mm-hmm. 64 kilobytes of memory. But we had WYSIWYG document editors. We could, you know, print drivers. Well, we had all of that. We have the same thing today. It's much more advanced, but it expands to kind of fill the container that it's in.
Absolutely.
So I guess the only other question I have about WinForms and WPF. So we got open source. We've got the fusion with .NET Core. And do you see, and I know you can't make commitments or guarantees, but do you see us caring as a company WinForms to kind of a next level, or is it more let's get it stable, working with .NET Core, here you are, community, it's open source, or do you think there's going to be iterations?
So I think there's always going to be continued iterations. I mean, obviously the community now has the ability to, and so that thus will lead us right in where we should go.
Sure.
But there's always going to be changes in Windows that are going to require more updates to both WinForms and WPF. Like a great example is DPI. You know, that's been one of the big sources of change that we've driven through in WinForms in the last few years is really addressing the fact that monitors went from, you know, 1024 by 768 to 4K.
So you have to deal with scaling multiple monitors
and you know, switching monitors, switching resolutions, switching you know, locations of monitor. Like there's modern desktops tend to have a lot more monitors than they used to, and a lot more situations where you're docking and undocking constantly.
Right.
And the other one is accessibility. That's been an area that has been a really big push for the company to make sure all our software is usable by everyone. And if you know, UI frameworks are obviously the crux of all of those things, right? That's kind of where everything kind of comes together. And making sure that all our UI frameworks have great accessibility support is something that, you know, as the tools and technologies for accessibility have moved forward, we have to make sure that those things also work well on our UI frameworks. And so those are two areas where we've been investing. And again, that has been driven by, you know, technology, internal feedback from, and external feedback from customers, and, you know, just kind of seeing where the industry is going. And I don't think that's going to change.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think 20 years ahead.
All right. So we'll have Windows Forms in the browser, in your holographic sky goggles. No problem.
Yeah. Well, sky's certainly the limit. And I'm still amazed that 20-year-old technology, like you said, your focus on it not being legacy, being actively used, but is able to come full circle, so to speak, and take advantage of all the modern performance improvements. So we've got a pretty exciting future. Everything's coming back full circle. We're not going to bring Silverlight back to life, unfortunately, but we're breathing new life
single
into
tier.
WinForms and WPF, and finally unifying .NET. So exciting times to be here.
Indeed, it really
is. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.